sometimes I meet people who tell me that their association with the Buddhist path or Buddhist teaching is that it is a rather grim and austere and somber tradition. So at times I feel that I sort of need to counter that and give talks on more uplifting and gladdening themes. But that's not what I'm going to do tonight. At least initially it will seem that that's not what I'm going to do tonight. You may change your mind as the talk goes on. Last year when I was having to deal with some rather complex and difficult situations that do arise in the politics of the Dharma world, I realized afterwards I was walking around with this somewhat unsettled feeling, and it took me some days to recognize or identify what that feeling was. And finally it came to me that actually this was disappointment. And then I was reflecting on it, and it occurred to me how disappointment is probably one of the most universal of human emotions. I mean, if you just say that word to yourself, being disappointed, I think I can feel pretty sure that everybody knows what I'm talking about. That it would be a very rare person in this life who wouldn't know what it was to experience disappointment. And I suspect that usually we think of disappointment as rather a negative experience and a negative emotion. So this evening what I would like to talk about is the wisdom of disappointment. Now my sense is that one way of describing an enlightened heart is a heart that really can't be shattered by disappointment. A heart that has, in some very deep way, surrendered the insistence that life must be other than it is. And this joy, that happiness that comes from that, I feel brings with it the wisdom of the willingness to be surprised and to meet each single moment in our life with a very profound openness and receptivity, to meet life just as it is. And for us to know this happiness, for us to know this unshakable heart, I feel it involves us learning what it means to step out of this uncomfortable marriage of wish and demand and disappointment. To learn what might be involved for us to release the frustration and the despair and the anger often that comes with or is born of our insistence that life, that other people, that we ourselves must be a certain way. Now probably as long as all of us can remember, disappointment has been part of our lives. Because there is simply so much in our life that is maybe not what we hoped for, not what we expected, that life often brings us a little less than we dreamt of, or turns out differently than we had hoped. We probably all remember the small and the large disappointments of our childhood. Times when a friend or rejected us, or hurt us in some way. The times when some of our childhood stories or mythologies turned out not to be true. We might have wished for a different family, a more loving family, parents or siblings that could give us more attention. As we've grown up, we may have found disappointments in not winning the admiration or success that we may have hoped for or had been expecting. And we see that disappointment plays itself out in a whole lot of different ways. Frustration, envy, blaming of ourselves, blaming of others. In fact, I think if we sometimes look underneath the layers of moments of anger, moments of frustration, moments of blame, moments of hurt, that very often to lift up the blanket and look underneath a little bit, what we see time and time again is this kind of core of a disappointed heart. As we go through our life, we continue to see that the ways that our wishes and hopes really can be shattered in very small ways and very large ways by the simple realities of life that we are continuing to argue with. And this dance in marriage of insistence and disappointment seems to follow us almost wherever we go. Perhaps we didn't end up right now with the mind that we'd hoped for, or the body that we'd wished for, or the relationship that we'd dreamt of. People tell me when they're living in the midst of the city of dreaming of and hoping for the peace that a trip to the country is going to bring, and they're no sooner out there than they're missing the vitality of the city. When people tell me when they work, they imagine and expect the bliss that retirement is going to bring. 5 days in, they're telling themselves how bored they are, and it wasn't quite what they expected. Some things in life seem to last too long, and some things in life just don't seem to last long enough. A few years ago, I went on a vacation, and I had one of these opportunities to swim with dolphins. And of course, countless people told me this was an opportunity not to be missed, you know, that this is one of these dream, magical moments that happen in life when you swim with dolphins. So of course, I went there, you know, quite hyped up, waiting for this dream to be realized. And, you know, it was okay for a little while until the dolphin bit me. And it was kind of interesting, you know, because this sort of like idyllic situation turned so quickly into this nightmare when you're sitting and swimming out there in the middle of lagoon bleeding. You see the set of teeth coming towards you. It was disappointing. One of those disappointing moments. But I think many, many times we've actually felt the deeper ache, much deeper ache of disappointment when people have let us down that we've counted on, or when in some way we've felt betrayed, or when we've felt that we haven't received the love or the support that we'd hoped for. And it does seem that the deeper connection that we have with another person, the deeper our sense of trust in another person, brings with it a certain vulnerability in which our hearts can be broken and disappointment can be so deep. So many times it happens that people tell me in the midst of their chaotic life, they sort of imagine the peace that a retreat is going to bring. And how often the first lesson they're asked to learn is about disappointment. That no longer, if they sat down on a cushion, then they're planning their departure, you know, or thinking about all the things they're missing outside of a retreat. In our meditation path, our own paths, you know, we can have so many hopes for what our practice might deliver. Resolutions or blazing insights, you know, or dramatic breakthroughs, or all the glorious moments we've read about. And, you know, sometimes we're just sitting there, you know, watching this chaotic mind, looking at an aching knee, checking our watch, you know, when is it going to be over, when is the bell going to be rung, and we're just touching again on what happens when we meet disappointment in our life anywhere. How difficult it is for us to embrace that, and how immediate our response is. How do I get out of this? Perhaps the most challenging, the most difficult disappointment to embrace is the many ways that we can be disappointed with ourselves. The times when we may have said things that afterwards we deeply regret, or feel sorry for, that have been hurtful to another. The times when we may have done things that afterwards we look back with remorse and wish that we'd done things differently. Even the times in ourselves when we can go into our life with so many wonderful intentions for to be loving, to be kind, to be compassionate, to be generous. And then sometimes find that those intentions are overtaken by more habitual tendencies that sometimes take us places very far from where we would really wish to be, and lead us to act or to speak or respond or react in ways that are very different than we'd hoped for. And so many times in those moments we just can feel this almost kind of crushing sense of disappointment that I'm not being the kind of person or I would wish to be, or not living up to my ideal of who I think I should be, or not really even on a deeper level really acting in accordance with our deeper sense of aspiration and vision and wisdom. In a way, it almost seems that the story of disappointment is too long a story to tell, and it can feel like a depressing story. But in truth, I really do feel in our life, in our practice, in the service of understanding, that this is a discomfort that we're asked to meet. Because the discomfort of disappointment is such a familiar companion in our lives. It would somehow be so naive to exclude it from awareness, or to exclude it as being somehow unimportant or insignificant. We find ourselves hanging often in this kind of suspended waiting in wishing for things we don't have, or to be who we are not, or waiting for a life that is yet to happen. Every moment of disappointment, in my understanding, is actually a glimpse of the first noble truth. That there is unsatisfactoriness, at times there is suffering in life. That every moment of disappointment, and it's seen more deeply in a way, is also a glimpse of the second noble truth. That there is a cause of suffering. There is a cause of disappointment. That the very nature of insistence, of longing for what is not, the very nature of wanting and waiting is almost to invite a chronic disappointment into our life. In a way, it's almost like volunteering for suffering. The very nature of holding, to demand or to insistence, is almost to surrender the joy and the peace that is possible for us, the joy and the peace that is really born of that deep inner capacity to embrace just what is. Every moment of disappointment, too, in my understanding, holds the seeds of the third noble truth within it, that there is a very real possibility for us in this life to see the end of pain and to really see the end of disappointment, to find a life or to live a life that is free from frustration and despair. And of course, the way that the Buddha's teaching is taught is that the end of pain or the end of suffering is actually found within pain and suffering and not outside of it. And I think one of the great blessings of the Buddha's teaching is that the very classroom of awakening and the classroom of freedom is in truth this life and everything that we experience in this life. So the encouragement in this teaching is actually to turn towards our life and also really to turn towards disappointment, to turn towards that which is difficult, that which is painful, and to discover the freedom that may be possible within it, born of wisdom, born of understanding. I'd like to read you a poem which for me really speaks to this sort of sense of immediacy, of finding the unshatterable within that which is shattered. It says, there is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside which is unbreakable and whole. And in the path of liberation asks us not only to find the grace and the courage and the compassion to embrace the discomfort and at times the very, very deep pain of disappointment, but it also asks us, the path of liberation, asks us to find the wisdom that is in the midst of that pain and disappointment. It seems to me that disappointment is the place where every great mystic and every great yogi has begun their journey. The disappointment is at the root of every path of enlightenment. As Siddhartha, before he was awakened, really began his journey in disappointment, a disappointment that his father, his family, had desperately tried to shield him from, even going to these incredible lengths of even removing the fading flowers and leaves from the trees in the palace gardens, not wanting Siddhartha to feel any discomfort or to have any sense that life should be anything other than perfect. And why do we imagine that it was so startling to Siddhartha when he went out of this constructed an engineered world of pleasure and perfection to meet life as it was. And when he met face to face a person who was bent and frail with age, when he saw a person who was sick and in pain, when he saw the body of a person who had died, why would we imagine that it was actually so startling to him? It was because he really understood in those encounters that his life was not as he had imagined it to be. And in each of those encounters, he kept turning around to his driver and saying, is this also going to happen to me? Am I also going to age? Am I also going to experience sickness? And am I also going to die? And each time he was told, yes, you too. You too, you're not exempt. And Siddhartha was so startled because in those moments he really understood that the way in which his expectations and his hopes and his wishes in a way were shattered. And in that moment, so too, in a very real way, was his world. And in that story of Siddhartha then leaving home, leaving his palace to enter the homeless life to begin his path, it's really not a story just about his geographical departure, but it's really a metaphor for Siddhartha leaving his palace of illusions and dreams and expectations. A disappointment for Siddhartha was an agent of change. It was an agent of transformation. Disappointment was for him, in truth, a turning point in his life, as I think it actually can be for us. If we can really find the willingness to meet and to understand the nature of frustrated attachment. The nature of frustrated attachment. Think of the ways that in the past and maybe in the present that we really endeavor to explain disappointment to ourselves. Well, one of the ways, maybe the ways you can relate to, is that we tell ourselves that life is unfair. This is not fair. This shouldn't be happening to me. It's just not fair. And this mantra, actually, of not fair can follow us right through our life. It seems we don't get what we want often enough. And in that, we blame ourselves or for not trying hard enough or not being good enough. Or we tend to blame the world. Sometimes when we meet disappointment, we find ourselves striving for an elusive perfection that always lies in another moment. One of the ways that we explain or respond to disappointment can be to sink into despair or apathy, to give up. It often seems that not doing something, not taking risks, not being vulnerable can seem safer than encountering again that world of disappointment. One of the ways that we respond to disappointment is actually to become quite angry, to simply complain. There's that wonderful Zen story, it's a Christian story, about a student who goes into a monastery for a very, very long retreat. And the deal is that this student gets an interview. It's a silent retreat. And this student gets an interview every 10 years in which he's allowed to say two words. So the first 10 years goes by and he's called in for his interview. And his teacher says, well, you know, how are things going? You know, how is it for you? And he answers, he says, bed hard. The teacher says, I'm sorry, you just haven't got it yet. You know, you need to go back and practice some more. So another 10 years goes by in silence. This is grand time for his interview again. He comes up and the teacher says, well, how's it going now? And he says, food bad. The teacher says, you still haven't got it. You know, go practice some more. So he goes back and he practices some more. Another 10 years goes by. He comes back for his third interview. The teacher says, how's it going now? How is it with you? And the student says, I quit. The teacher says, I'm not surprised. You've done nothing but complain for the last 30 years. We can become so angry or so blaming or because of not truly understanding the nature of the way things are. Not really being able to make peace with the simple truth of the moment. And one of the ways that we respond to disappointment is just to tell ourselves that we counted on the wrong person. Or we counted on the wrong thing. Or we strove for the wrong thing. Or we had the wrong goal. And so we just transfer those same expectations and those same wishes to another person, to another relationship, to another goal, to another dream that we hope that we're going is going to deliver what the last one didn't. Basically, we feel disappointed when our map of life is sabotaged by reality. And there is a simple cure for this. We really need to understand what it means to just stop arguing with the way things are. But instead, too often we feel let down, and so this tragic cycle, it becomes a tragic cycle of wishing, demanding, insisting, frustration, disappointment, going round in one circle after another. And it can make us bitter, suspicious, mistrustful. So what is the insight, what is the understanding that we are really being asked to meet here? Because we see that disappointment can indeed be this black hole that we sort of disappear into. But disappointment can also be for us, for each one of us, a genuine turning point. It can make us bitter. Or it can also be disappointment, a beginning of freedom. And really a beginning of waking up to life's realities. The freedom, that freedom begins through our willingness not to flee from disappointment, but to turn towards it. Any moment, and most of us don't have to look hard for the moments of disappointment. To find the willingness to turn towards them and to ask ourselves what it is that we are truly being asked to learn. That where is the insight, where is the freedom within this most uncomfortable feeling? First we see that disappointment and expectation or insistence do seem to go hand in hand. That craving and frustration are really two sides of the same impulse. And yet it can be hard for us to imagine actually a life that is not shaped by wanting. It can be hard for us to imagine a life that is not shaped by expectations. When we see that from the moment that we wake up in the morning, hoping that the weather is going to be a certain way, hoping that our backache is going to be disappeared, hoping there's no traffic, hoping that our work colleagues are going to be in a better mood. We can see that it just seems to kind of spread through and pervade every moment of our day. Almost as if moment after moment we're kind of inviting this struggle and this suffering in, but we can also learn to liberate those moments. We can also learn really to illuminate those moments with understanding. Now, most of us, I think, if we're honest, we do see that we surely do want life to be a certain way. And in truth, some of our expectations come from a very, very deep place in our hearts. And they are deeply valid. You know, even the Buddha said, don't give up your wish for liberation too soon. You know, we see that we do wish for happiness and for love and for freedom. We do wish for peace and for justice. We do all wish to see in our world and in our lives an end of alienation and of struggle, to discover a depth of compassion and understanding. And quite frankly, without those expectations, really none of us would be here. So many of those aspirations, many of those, in a way, those expectations move us in the direction towards really discovering the possibility of great depth and great freedom. And to have none of those aspirations, to have none of those expectations in our lives, to seek for nothing, is not what this path recommends. I think what is really important for us is to really try and spot those moments when those very deep and heartfelt aspirations and expectations start to turn and to pick up this kind of shadow side of insistence, of demand, even a sense of entitlement. This has to be for me. When do those very deep aspirations and expectations, at what point, in truth, do they begin to cause us to suffer? And that is actually really what we need to see. How do we even turn some of those aspirations or expectations into a kind of measurement of our self-worth? When we say, oh, this hasn't come to be, it must be because I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy enough, or I'm not perfect enough. At what point do they become a forerunner of struggle and disappointment rather than a forerunner of encouragement and inspiration? At what point, in fact, do we invest so much of a sense of self into those aspirations and expectations that failure seems to shatter our hearts? Now, Siddhartha's father did everything for him except provide for him a forum in which he could really explore what it meant to let go. Except provide a forum for him in which he could understand really what it meant to find an unshatterable heart and a life of freedom. Now, it seems to me that we're a little bit more fortunate, because in many ways life continues to provide us those forums. Can we first begin to embrace the discomfort of disappointment rather than to jump away from it? It's hard, because I think most of us in our culture recognize that we have actually very low tolerance levels for discomfort at any level. You know, how we go through our life saying, you know, I don't want to be disturbed, you know, I don't want to be uncomfortable, I don't want to be challenged. And you know, almost we can come to the path of meditation thinking that this might be another way to console ourselves and or reassure ourselves. And I must say, you know, that the purpose of meditation is actually to disturb us. So that's our first disappointment. It is actually here to certainly to provide refuge and peace, but also to disturb us, to challenge our expectations, to lead us to stretch ourselves, to learn how to let go, to learn not to continually endeavor to manipulate our world to serve our low tolerance levels for discomfort, but actually to find a peace of heart and equanimity of heart which is not dependent upon conditions. The illusion, one of the illusions that keeps expectation and insistence and disappointment spinning in our life, I believe, is the illusion that somehow we imagine that we should have a discomfort-free life. It is one of the illusions. The Buddha addressed this, I think, in a rather succinct way. You know, he said, did you ever see in this world a man or a woman 80 or 90 or 100 years old, frail and crooked as a gable roof, bent down, resting on crutches with tottery steps, infirm with youth long fled, broken teeth, gray and scanty hair or none, wrinkled with blotched limbs? And did the thought never come to you, you also cannot escape this? I think if we open our eyes just a little, just even a little, and see the way that our world is so punctuated with hurt and with loss and with fear, with grief and with sadness, and did the thought never come to us that this too will come to us? That we are not exempt? You know, Freud once said that neurosis is the refusal to suffer. I think that Buddha said it a little bit differently. It's perhaps saying that the unwillingness to embrace suffering with grace and with compassion and with understanding, that that unwillingness is perhaps the greatest of all suffering. I do feel that the most broken moments in our lives ask us to pause and to reflect and to see more deeply and to ask ourselves, how can we free ourselves of the suffering of disappointment? Now that we do know that we can never totally free ourselves of hurt or sadness or grief, that this is part of being human. This is part of what it means to have a heart that can be touched, that is alive to the world. We also know that there is discomfort in life that we can't avoid or escape. It is just what comes with having a body, having a mind, having a life. But the deeper ache of disappointment, I think this is something different. That this is in truth an open door to freedom. And to be able to find in ourselves the willingness, really the willingness, to be interested in disappointment. To be curious about it. To turn towards it is really to take the first step to walk through that door of freedom. Maybe first we would ask ourselves, what is it that we were insisting upon? What is it of life or of ourselves that we have been demanding, expecting? And how tightly have we been holding on to those demands or wishes or expectations? And perhaps we begin to see that the degree of tightness with which we hold to our insistence that life or others or ourself must be in a certain way, that is also how tightly we bind ourselves to frustration and disappointment. You know, a little bit of insistence, a little disappointment. A lot of insistence, a lot of frustration. Sometimes we don't even realize how much our happiness and well-being has relied upon that insistence and those demands being met until once more we find ourselves in that black hole of frustrated attachment. We didn't even really realize how strongly we hold the map of how life should be, of how we should be, until that map is challenged. And that really is the wisdom element. That's the discomfort we're asked to embrace. Should and frustration being married to one another. And in a way, wisdom is really learning the wisdom of shouldlessness. The wisdom of shouldlessness in our life. In some ways, disappointment is a little bit like a small death. Because it's the death of a wish. Sometimes it's the death of a self-view. Sometimes it's the death of a worldview. Sometimes it's just the death of the view that we've had about another person. And if we can just see that and relax into it, maybe then we're really ready to meet the world, to meet life, to meet this moment just as it is. Never certain, never sure, never predictable, full of surprises, full of change. That reliability is just not the nature of this life. And somehow this is something that we do often expect and demand. In a way, one of the ways to really dissolve the discomfort of disappointment I experience is really to look it in the eye. To befriend it. To almost see what it means to sit side by side with the feeling of disappointment. If it's hot, just to meet that heat. If our back aches, just to be with that aching back. If the rain comes down, it is the way it is. If our friend has disappointed us or let us down, then we ask ourselves, really, what do we understand about friendship? Can we embrace imperfection? If the mind is unruly and we want to escape, maybe we could learn to turn towards it and to befriend it. There is no cure for discomfort. It's part of being alive. But there is a cure for disappointment and fear and aversion. By learning, I think, to hold some of our demands and some of our insistence just a little bit more lightly. You know, some of the core aspirations of this practice, non-attachment, equanimity, freedom, peace, these are not destinations. They're not fixed abodes that are said to lie in some future moment. They are practices. They are verbs. We practice equanimity. We practice letting go. You know, we practice allowing, embracing, in a way not trying to fix anything in place at all. And perhaps we can then allow just some of our demands to gradually hold just a little bit less importance. And not to allow our insistence, not to allow our shoulds, not to allow our expectations to be such gatekeepers of our happiness. Such gatekeepers of our own hearts and sense of balance. It's not easy practice. This is really quite hard practice because we see our life is so saturated on so many levels with this sense or this idea of how it has to be. We see that our minds generating in small and large ways as we go through our day. You know, this is kind of insistence. You know, every year I teach in Switzerland in this center that's really quite high up in the Alps. And it looks out, you know, in this most incredible sort of panorama of mountains, you know, and you're very high up and you're looking down this lake and it's one of these real jewels in the universe, you know, and it's so stunning. And I was so interested that this year when I was there, a person came up to me and they said, you know, I was here last year and I was just so stunned by it that I just, by being here, that I just had to come back. And then she said to me, But you know, it's not as beautiful as I remember it. I thought, well, I'm pretty sure the mountains really haven't changed much in the last few hundred years or thousand years, but somehow the expectation had jaded the capacity to really see that anew and to really see it afresh, that somehow the very insistence, you know, the very memory had generated a kind of insistence that life, you know, that somehow she should have the same experience. And yet the very insistence seemed to sabotage the capacity to be touched and to be startled in the same way. And I'm sure we experience this many, many moments in our life. And we could really ask ourselves what it would be like to meet a friend, to meet our partner, to meet ourselves, to meet this moment with a heart and a mind that is resting in a place of just simply not knowing what to expect, of really having that willingness to be surprised, of not carrying the baggage of how it used to be, how you used to be, how you must be now. What would it be like to enter every sitting, to enter into our life with that sense of not knowing what to expect, and perhaps we can really get a glimmer of maybe the sense of freedom that is held within that not knowing. What would it be like to come to a sitting not expecting the resumption of pain or the resumption of the chaotic mind that we've seen a thousand times before? What is it like to listen to a bird before the concept bird even arises in our minds? You know, and this path, this practice is really an encouragement towards that immense sense of openness and freshness, and much of it is really born of our real willingness to let go moment to moment to moment to moment, not counting the times, just one moment at a time. And then perhaps we can begin to discover the peace and the happiness of that, the freedom, the liberation that is born when we can liberate the world and liberate ourselves a little bit from the weight of our shoulds and expectations. You know, Nagarjuna, who was a wonderful, wonderful Indian teacher on emptiness, you know, he said to no longer insist on being someone is to be free to be no one. And we could almost kind of expand that and say, when I no longer insist on you being a certain way, you're actually free to be who you are. You know, and when I no longer insist that this moment is a certain way, in a way it's not just about liberating ourselves, but it is truly about liberating the world from the weight of our demand and insistence. It's almost inviting ourselves and everything in this world to share in that sense of freshness and openness and freedom. This map of life, this map of ourselves and this map of other people that we can hold so tightly, in truth it only takes us to places that we have been before, that we already know. It is like, again, and this example keeps coming up in my mind, it's like going to watch the movie of the Titanic 100 times and keep imagining it's going to have a different ending. It doesn't. It ends in the same place. And actually, in a way, the weight of our expectations, the weight of our insistence is almost keeping us to the same ending of the same movie over and over again. To let go of the weight of that insistence of that map may allow us actually to travel to places of not knowing, of being touched, of being truly touched in a way that is deeply fresh. And yet not knowing, I think, is the hardest place for us to rest, because knowing is our security. Insistence is what seems to provide us with safety, with familiarity, with a world that we can move around in, protecting ourselves from too many bumps and knocks. It's the hardest place for us to rest, but is also the place of greatest mystery. Now, it does seem really to me that deepening in meditation has really something to do with our ability to bear the discomfort of disappointment and to learn the lessons that it offers to us. It also really feels to me that happiness and peace in our lives has a great deal to do with this same ability to bear that discomfort. You know, when we often begin to practice, we can expect bliss and calm and peace and rapture. And that's what we want often from the practice when we begin. And we think the way to this bliss and this peace and this rapture is actually by getting rid of everything that is uncomfortable. Getting rid of our unruly minds. Getting rid of all the thoughts. Getting rid of everything that sort of disturbs us. And what happens? We soon discover that our mind and our life has followed us onto the cushion. And it has followed us onto our walking path. And so often we might initially find ourselves saying, this shouldn't be happening. How do we know something should be happening? It's because it is happening. And there's a wonderful liberation that comes when we actually just stop arguing with that. And it doesn't mean sinking into despair, and it doesn't mean sinking into passivity, but it is the beginning of our willingness to turn towards what is happening. And then maybe we discover we can actually make room for the unruly mind, and it doesn't feel so unruly. That maybe we can make room for the difficult emotions and for some of the hardship of our lives, and making room suddenly, we find that we have the capacity to bear with that discomfort. Maybe we can make space rather than making disappointment. And in doing that, we may actually discover that our hearts don't have to be shattered. I think the wisdom that disappointment teaches us again and again is really to let go of everything that we do attach ourselves to learn how to lighten the load of some of our demands and insistence. And when we make room for the disturbing, we also discover it is not so disturbing. When we cease to find ground in that which is essentially groundless, we suddenly discover we have much more balance and can find our way to truly a heart that cannot be shattered. If we have just a moment quietly together.